20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into Behind Enemy Lines, a collaboration between the Paul Farrington Show and the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Paul, joined by Robert Ziggy Ziegler and Andy Herman of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. Going to be reacting to some NFC North. I know, don't worry. We'll take care of Andy in this episode. Some NFC North football from over the weekend. Ziggy is still in Cambodia, which I have to say, I thought Ziggy was home. And when I texted it, so yesterday I get a text from Ziggy that goes, "Hey, we still on for Andy tomorrow?" It's like, "Yeah, let me just shoot him over a text. I think so." So I go, "Andy, you good to go tomorrow?" He goes, "Sure. How about 3 o'clock Eastern? That work?" I said, "Should be fine, but let me just check with Ziggy." And Ziggy goes, "Well, I'm actually still in Cambodia. So can we do early?" It's like, "Ziggy, when are you coming back?" Apparently we just have no idea when Ziggy will be back. So Andy, thank you for the flexibility and being able, we're recording pretty early in the morning now. So appreciate your flexibility.
Tell you, this is actually connected to the NFC North, and we'll get into that a little bit in just a couple of minutes, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know how to even lead into that, but yeah, we'll get to that.
The Lions are moving to Cambodia. It's now the Cambodia Lions is what's happening.
There's new NFL franchises out here.
So Andy, I don't think I texted you since the, like, maybe did I say sorry, Andy, to you? I don't think I did.
I'd have to go back and look. I remember the one I remember is obviously we talked around like halftime of how insane this was, and then I'm like, I'm very happy, and then everything basically died from there.
Yeah, and I was I actually stayed up till like 2:30 in the morning watching your show. After we finished our recording, I sat down on the couch, and you know, I like to just decompress after these recordings, and like, let me see Andy, because Ziggy logged on. He was like, "Andy's not happy, guys." And I was like, "All right, let me see how unhappy he actually is." So I went over and I watched, I probably watched at least an hour of the show up to eventually like 2:30 a.m. I was like, "All right, and I think you were still recording when I actually logged on." I was like, "All right, I'm just going to, I got to go to sleep. I don't know how long this is going to go on till." But yeah, then I decided, let me give him a day at least to kind of, you know, settle down here. And then I think I just wound up saying like, "Hey, we on for the recording?" So how are you doing now that you've had, what, 48, you know, you had 2 days to process this?
Yeah, it's probably not too dissimilar from, you know, how we were originally feeling. I mean, again, as Packers fans, we are very, very used to heartbreaking playoff losses. So it doesn't get any easier in the moment. In fact, I think it maybe stings even more because you kind of convince yourself going in, it can't happen again. They can't lose in some new heartbreaking fashion. I will say, I think afterwards, like getting over it maybe is a little bit, you're like, you know how to cope and deal with it. Because again, we've been here on so many different occasions of having losses exactly like this. But, you know, obviously the, you know, just conversation is dominated by what's going to happen to Matt LaFleur. I do think there's always, you know, regardless of whether you win or you lose or whatever happens, there is always that just kind of immediate turning of the page of you start looking at next year. You start figuring out, all right, what are we looking at here? And what are the most pressing things that are going to have to happen in this franchise? And for Green Bay, it now is obviously the Matt LaFleur decision. And then on top of that, you know, there's sort of two branches. If the LaFleur, you know, situation does not get done and there is some sort of falling out between the two sides, because obviously we heard from Adam Schefter that they're working towards a contract extension. But if something would have fall apart, of course, you're now in a situation where you're looking for a new head coach and probably an entirely new staff and everything else, which would be, you know, quite the change in Green Bay and quite the topic to talk about. And then on the flip side, if Matt does stay, obviously talking about what that extension looks like and then immediately kind of going into what happens to Rich Bisaccia, what happens to Adam Stenovich, what happens, does Jeff Hafley get a head coaching job and those sort of things, and what positions are getting changed over. Offensive line coach, I know, is a big one that seems like it needs a new coat of paint. So you obviously transition immediately to those sort of things. But yeah, as far as the numb, you know, kick you in the nuts also sort of feeling at the same time that, you know, we felt the other day, it's definitely still there. And yeah, that's one that sticks with you for a while.
You guys seem to, man, you really do have it seem to come up almost every season at this point where I like to complain a lot as a Viking fan, and trust me, there's no point in time during this recording will I ever, you know, lament the Packers more than I do the Vikings. But you guys have had a rough like 15 years here. It's been some heartbreaking losses year in and year out, it seems. But I think a good rule is the 24-hour rule after games like that, because people log on, and I mean if you went on like Packers Twitter, I mean, you know, on your show, right? I saw you guys had, you know, thousands of people watching that one. And it seemed almost consensus that people wanted Matt LaFleur gone. And Ziggy, you came on our show and you were kind of talking like you want him out too. Do you still think that?
I mean, whatever happens in Green Bay this offseason, there needs to be a story about how things will be different next year. Because it's just too many times, you know, it's not exactly the same story, but it rhymes. You're seeing very similar things happen in Green Bay, whether it's special teams mishaps or the team losing focus after they've got a little bit of a lead, or play calling that's just bizarre. Like, the same things that have been going wrong in Green Bay really since Matt LaFleur got there have continued to happen in the biggest moments. Now, does that mean you have to get rid of LaFleur? Not necessarily. But if you don't, there needs to be a clear story about how things are going to be different next year, because you've got players who are going to have to get paid more and more money. You've got a Super Bowl window that's closing pretty quickly as other teams start to get good around them in the NFC.
I don't know.
Like, this was one of the better opportunities for the Packers. I know you're the seventh seed, right? But like, the Eagles lost, right? If the Packers had won this game, you can be saying, look, we can go into Seattle. We can beat Sam Darnold. He's struggled before. Like, this was one of the years the Packers could have gone on a run with Jordan Love playing well. You need some story about what's going to be different next year, because it can't be exactly the same thing again, where you get to the seventh seed, you're lucky if you win one game, and then you go home saying you've got a really good regular season win percentage. Like, that's not going to cut it in Green Bay.
I was actually really surprised. Again, not really surprised, but if you had asked me, I thought you put it really well, Andy, when you said, had you drawn up a blueprint for getting fired, right? From halftime of the Broncos game on, it was almost perfectly followed by LaFleur and Green Bay.
Yep.
And with the way it did play out and blowing that 18-point lead, I was actually a little surprised when Schefter reported yesterday that it at least looks like he's going to get an extension. I know he didn't say it's officially going to be locked in or anything like that, and perhaps there's wiggle room when it comes down to the financials. But just the response of the Packer Nation, kind of like, the, you know, the Cardinals fans drove out Jonathan Gannon. And it seemed like that was kind of happening. At least, you know, again, I know it's right after the game, tensions are high, but it seemed like Packer fans, and most of them that I've talked to since, want him out. I don't want to put you on the spot, because I know you kind of know Matt a little bit, but like, is there anything after taking a little time, do you want him back? I guess I will put you on the spot. Do you want LaFleur back?
Yeah. First of all, that's definitely a misconception. That's I don't know. Matt and I have spoken one time for, 5 minutes, and we talked about youth basketball the majority of those 5 minutes. So outside of asking him, you know, questions in press conferences, I don't have Matt's number in my phone.
Like, he'd recognize you, and you know.
No, I know, but I'm just saying in general. I think not from even you guys, just but from others, okay, that there's that misconception that, you know, we have this. We definitely do not. I think, and just as far as what I would do with Matt, I really don't honestly mean to both sides this, but I really can understand both sides. And I think that there will be a part of me that is relieved and a part of me that is frustrated in either scenario. And, you know, so if, as far as moving on from Matt, I think the big thing is that almost exactly what Ziggy said is that, you know, all of the issues in the Matt LaFleur era were sort of packaged together in this, you know, shiny crap fest of a, you know, result against Chicago. And in the, especially in that second half, where again, special teams errors, self-inflicted wounds, you know, just not being able to do anything after you get a lead, just all of it. Yeah. A fourth quarter collapse. It's all there. And all of these things have sort of, you know, happened in the Matt LaFleur era, where it's really difficult. And you literally had this game to learn from 3 weeks ago against Chicago. Yep. And a part of me that's going through the game is like, I had a sense of calm, and I'm like, they're not going to blow this again. Like, they're not going to do this same thing twice, yeah. and they did. And so I absolutely think that like that, I talked about it again, and I've said this multiple times now, but you know, 6 weeks ago when I thought the entire Matt LaFleur conversation of being fired was beyond absurd, I said, well, hey, if all of a sudden, you know, at the end of the year, he loses 5-6 games in a row and the wild card game is eliminated in, you know, embarrassing fashion, like, yeah, then all bets are off. The conversation can be on the table at that point. And here we are, 5 losses in a row, an embarrassing loss to the Bears in the playoffs. And it's a real legitimate conversation. And I have, and again, Ziggy, I think, put it perfectly too, of like, hey, if he's back, there has to be a firm definition of what's changing. There needs to be a new special teams coordinator. There needs to be a new offensive line coach. You're probably, depending on what happens with Jeff Hafley, this is not a need or a want, but you're going to have probably a new defensive coordinator just because he's probably gone. So there's just going to be a lot of things that are going to have to change. And I think it's really difficult to say from like a fan base standpoint, when you're going to have the hot seat's going to be nuclear in Green Bay next year. And if anything goes even remotely wrong early in the year, it's just going to feel like the weight of everything is on Matt and on the organization. And I think that's a really sort of difficult thing to navigate. I guess at the same time, if he gets like this 4-year crazy extension, Green Bay saying he's not going anywhere, I still don't know that that changes the sentiment in Green Bay. In fact, it probably puts even more pressure on him. And then on the flip side, I don't love the other candidates that are out there. There's not a candidate that I love. In fact, Brian Flores would probably be one of the ones that I would be most interested in. We've seen the Flores situation. I'm impressed Baltimore has actually given him the chance, but it doesn't seem like there's eight openings out there. There are 8 NFL openings out there, probably going to be 9 with Pittsburgh. And you're telling me one of them are going to interview Brian Flores? You're telling me one of them are going to interview Brian Flores? I guess have the Raiders confirmed anything yet? Because I know there was buzz there for a while.
I don't know if they've confirmed it yet. I know that he was at one point the betting favorite to be the Raiders head coach.
I don't know. Maybe there's a couple more out there that I just am either forgetting or haven't seen yet. But either way, neither here nor there. He should be on every list, let's be honest. But I there's not a whole ton of candidates out there that I feel better about. And I do legitimately believe that if you were like an expansion franchise and you and Matt LaFleur were available with all the rest of the candidates that are available out there right now, or just if you're the Cardinals, if you're the Titans, if you're the Falcons, if you're the Dolphins, I think Matt LaFleur is the best candidate on the market in that situation. And so do you really want to change for the sake of change? There's just still a piece of me that does believe that Matt LaFleur can get this done. And the locker room was over the top aggressively calling for him to be back yesterday during exit interviews, which I think does go a long way. I think no signs of that, if it's in the opposite way in any direction, you have to move on. But he has very clearly not lost that locker room. And not only that, but they, you know, sort of went above and beyond to say they want him back. So that all plays a part. But again, it's a very long-winded answer of not giving an answer. But I legitimately and absolutely empathize with those who want him gone and have no issue with that anymore whatsoever. And if they go in a different direction, I just hope they somehow find a way to make a really good head coaching hire in a cycle that there doesn't seem like a lot of great options. And if they keep him, I can understand it. And there's a piece of me that will be, okay, I still think that he can get this done, but I do think that there's going to be so much freaking pressure on him going into this year.
This is the thing that makes keeping Matt LaFleur really hard, I think, is Ed Policy has said over and over again that he doesn't like having a lame duck head coach, and there's a lot of wisdom to that. The thing that's tough about LaFleur, and I think, Andy, you said this well, is you can give him basically whatever deal you want. He's going to feel like next year they have to do better or he's going to get fired, right? Like, yep. They can make all the changes. You can bring in a new offensive coordinator, but every decision he makes, if he gives up offensive play calling, people are going to say, well, that's because of the last step of him getting kicked out. If he keeps it, people are going to say, well, then if the play calling starts going bad, he needs to get fired. If they win one playoff game, people say, we already did that. That's not good enough. Like, it puts expectations on that they basically have to win a Super Bowl or the head coach gets fired.
No.
And that's not, and I don't mean that's going to be expectations from the organization. But Paul, you've read our comments section. Packers fans this year were saying that. Like, that's what the situation will be. And it's tough when the fan base is so hostile to a head coach. And it's not like winning a bunch of regular season games is going to prove that it's right. Right? The whole point fans say is, who cares how many regular season games you win? This is Titletown. And unfortunately, that means that all the expectation will be on one or two playoff games. And that's just a tough situation to put a coach and a team in.
Well, it's a tough situation to be in. But look, first off, they are the Green Bay Packers, right? It's like I have a Yankee hat on here. There's certain expectations for certain franchises. And then when you, on top of that, say, all right, look at this team. They have underachieved under this coach. It hasn't felt like there's a lot of accountability. Like Rich Bisaccia does still have a job, and that special teams unit has been terrible. I don't think
he's not going to be back. I'm pretty sure the reason it hasn't been announced is just because like they need when LaFleur, if LaFleur gets an extension, that's when it's going to be announced. I would expect they're not going to.
There's certainly an order of operations. Yeah. You don't let Rich go and then, you know, let Matt go after. Like you figure out the Matt situation first and then go from there. Correct.
Yeah. I don't think them winning the Super Bowl is going to be it's Super Bowl or bust for LaFleur. If he comes back and that, you know, they have a really good year where he's a good coach, right? And he doesn't have as many moments or just really any of the moments like Dallas where you have the timeout situation or the, you know, the Chicago games where you're just blowing these leads that you simply can't blow. When you want to win a Super Bowl, you can't have a handful of the endings. The Browns game, right? I mean, that just can't happen. And I know it's not all on LaFleur, but there are a lot of things that you can point back to LaFleur. So to me, it's more of a you know it when you see it kind of a thing, where if they go into the playoffs next year and they're in the divisional round and they're up 10 with 3 minutes left, even if they have a great year and LaFleur blunders the end of the game, then Packers fans can sit back and go, are we really going to do this again? But if the Packers go to the divisional round or the wild card round and they lose, you know, like 35-36 in a game-winning field goal from, you know, from Will Reichard, let's just say, to send the Vikings to the divisional round.
That's first-team All-Pro.
First-team All-Pro Will Reichard, by the way. Then I think, you know, you go, okay, they just got beat. But the Packers they usually beat themselves. That's what it feels like. And that's a reflection on the head coach. And so I get what you're saying, Andy, that there are certain Packers fans who are going to see this news that he's probably coming back and go like, we're seriously running this back again. But I do think the players coming out the way they have speaks volumes. Like really does. And who's at the forefront of it? Jordan Love in the press conference, Micah Parsons saying he's calling Matt LaFleur, telling him how, you know, I love playing for you. And a reason I came here and wanted to come here is Matt LaFleur. Like that's just so different than the Lamar Jackson, John Harbaugh situation where Lamar won't even say, we won't even commit to it, you know, loosely after the Ravens Steelers game. Nah, I'm too busy, man. Like I got other things on my mind. When they asked Love, it was, of course I want Matt back. And that has to mean something in the locker room. So when I saw the players react like that, despite what the fans want, it's not as surprising to see, okay, they're going to bring this dude back for another year. And it will be pressure, though. That's the NFL.
You look at like the potential outcomes of next year, right? And you kind of were going through some of them, Paul. Like, let's say they, you know, Micah doesn't come back till week 4 or 5 and they start like 1-3, you know, 1-4 on the season. It will be like just insane to begin with. Like, it'll be like just brutal right off the bat. If they go 16-1 in the season, but have this game, have the same sort of situation, whether it's in the wild card or it wouldn't be in the wild card. I would assume at 16-1, they'd have the bye, but in the divisional round or even in the NFC championship where they're favorites, they're going into the game. They've got a, you know, 10-point lead late in the game and they blow it or anything like that. That will still be it's the same thing. You get to the playoffs and you can't win in the playoffs. Then this is, I think, the biggest, like regular season Matt, even though it hasn't been great as of late, regular season Matt is not the issue for the most part. There's been, you know, games here, there, but that's not been the issue for the most part. Regular season Matt's been fine. Postseason Matt's been the issue. And obviously if you go, I mean, if you miss the playoffs, it's done. And like, you do get to a point, it may be to your point of like, yes, if they just get beat by somebody, but even then, it depends on if it's in the NFC championship game. And again, you get a couple unlucky bounces or whatever, and it goes against you, or there's maybe some bad rough calls. Sure, maybe you can survive that if you had a really good regular season, good postseason up to it. Maybe you lose in the Super Bowl or whatever, and that's enough or whatever. But I think that there are very few, you know, through lines of how you get to a successful Matt LaFleur season next year for Packers fans that doesn't include a Super Bowl win or just almost like a near flawless season and a honorable, you know, loss at the end. And those are hard to come by. I don't know. It's just going to be very difficult to satiate, I think, Packers fans and expectations going into next year with bringing him back. And by the way, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't bring him back. I'm just saying there's going to be a crap ton of pressure.
We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code Packaday. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
And I, and just looking over the candidates, as you mentioned, a lot of people are talking about John Harbaugh, who by the way, you know, blows a lot of leads. Like John, one of his big flaws is the leads that the Ravens have blown.
Sort of his MO.
And it's kind of funny sitting back here with Packers fans going, you know, we got to be able to hold on to these things. And okay, the other guy, he's a great coach. I mean, all these guys are really good coaches. That's kind of funny about the whole situation is if the Steelers like go with Tomlin, which I still don't think is going to, you think it's going to happen, Andy?
I mean, just based on how things went yesterday, it kind of seemed that way, but you never know with Pittsburgh. I mean, they could easily, yeah, you know, sign him to a 30-year extension. Nothing would surprise me with that either, but it does feel like there's at least a possibility that position could open up.
But Tomlin, another great coach, and usually you don't see, it sort of seems like all at once, all these teams are saying, okay, do we want to do this again and try and get out of the rut that we're in? Even though that means, you know, getting rid of a legendary coach in some sense for the organization. I wouldn't put LaFleur in the same category as Tomlin and Harbaugh, but would Tomlin be someone you'd want to look at? I just don't even know who the Packers would go to if they moved on from LaFleur, which just adds another tick in the, okay, he's probably why he comes back.
So for me, again, if it would take some sort of like, if you could have a Brian Flores with like a Mike McDaniel offensive coordinator calling the plays, and like, you know, you get a Christian Parker or a Jim Leonard as the defensive coordinator, and they're fine with not calling plays because, you know, you have Brian Flores, that's the kind of, you know, obviously de facto defensive coordinator in that situation. Bring in a new special teams coach, doesn't even matter. Ziggy can do it at that point in time, and I'm totally cool with it. Like that, that's a group that I'm fine with. I could say like, yeah. But, and this is what I've said to Packers fans too, is that, okay, we wish Matt away and Matt's gone, and everyone might have some sort of ideal candidate that they could have. We have no idea. Like for me, one of the worst case scenarios would be like Cliff Kingsbury. I would have no interest in Cliff Kingsbury. I would be a nightmare scenario. And the Packers could go with Cliff Kingsbury. They could go with Daryl Bevel. They could go with Brad Childress. You know, they could go with like a bunch of, you know, and I'm saying some of those facetiously, obviously, but like, we have no idea who they would actually hire. And there's not a lot of great options. So there's going to probably be more candidates that they end up with that I'm like, oh my God, like you just fired Matt for that. That's probably not going to end well. I do think if they went in that direction, and one of the interesting aspects of this is the money, where Green Bay does not like spending a crap ton of money on their coaching staff. And if you're going to bring in John Harbaugh, he's going to get like 18, 20 mil per year, something insane. And he's going to bring his whole staff with him. You have to nuke your current staff, which is going to be money. You have to bring in a whole new staff of his choosing, which is going to be a ton of money. I don't know that Green Bay does that, but I think I think he is the type of candidate that Green Bay would want to go to, because I think you're looking for two things. You've got a Super Bowl caliber roster. You're looking for a head coach with experience, not somebody that's coming in and coaching for the first time and has no idea how to navigate this or navigate a playoffs and navigate, you know, a locker room that's ready to win right now. And I think you're looking for toughness. I think you're looking for some level of, you know, and what we saw what Baltimore just did to Green Bay, that is going to have that no-nonsense type of attitude. And I think John Harbaugh checks both of those boxes. So I think it would probably be something of that ilk. But again, we don't know what direction that they would go in for sure. And there's a lot of really ugly directions that could exist if you do end up, you know, firing Matt LaFleur.
Is that a problem, though, with the Packers and the coaching staff not wanting to, you know, not wanting to shell out? Because I'm just thinking back to, you know, the Eagles with Sean Desai in 2023, right? When that falls apart, their season, they go big game hunting. Like, that's something that I really admire about the Eagles. As much as I hate, the Eagles as an organization for, you know, the Vikings NFC Championship game and how the fan base acts sometimes, I can't help but admire them, because when in 2023, you know, they have a Super Bowl worthy roster, they feel like they go out and get Vic Fangio. And I mean, he's just been awesome for that defense. And sometimes, you know, like my grandfather used to say, even though I didn't know my grandfather that well, my grandfather used to say, like, you know, shit you pay, shit you get. And it kind of is like that, right? With everything. So yeah. If the Packers, with Green Bay, it's so obvious so many times, like you're watching the special teams. And I get that LaFleur and Bisacci are friends, right? Like,
well, they are now probably, but like that wasn't a connection going in to that situation. That was a outside hire. And to be fair on that one, you know, they made, you know, one of the, I think at the time, and he might even was the special teams, you know, highest paid special teams, you know, coordinator. So there has been that change there, but go continue.
No. I'm sure Bisacci was, from the background he had, right, with the Raiders and all that, I'm sure he got paid a lot. But what I just mean is that, you know, the Packers have glaring coaching problems. And when you're not addressing those, and then, like, I hear you say, all right, they're not too interested in, like, the coaching staff, it just makes me say, like, all right, well, what's actually going on here? Is that a fair question to have?
It is. And Justice Mosqueda has done a great job of outlining this and over on Acme Packing Company, of like what they've done with their coaching staff and decisions and kind of going on the cheap with a lot of this stuff. And to me, it is potentially, if it continues that way. And again, I think the Bisacci hire is at least a sign of like, hey, we're willing to maybe change some things up and make a expensive hire to try to fix something. And they brought in, they fired one, you know, a special teams assistant to bring in two of, you know, Rich Bisacci's assistants in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hopeful that this is going to be a sign that, hey, we're going to get the guy that we want. I don't think money limited them in the defensive coordinator search when they found Jeff Hafley. I think Jeff Hafley, you know, there was a rumor that there was one other person that maybe they liked more, that Hafley was their second choice. I don't know if we ever got that confirmed, but either way, I don't think money was a limiting factor. But it is, just in general, not just from a Packers standpoint, it is one of the craziest things where you see these teams build, like, you know, $500 million rosters and then be like, well, we're going to spend a couple bucks here on our coaching staff. There is no salary cap for coaching staff. The fact that some team hasn't figured out of like, yeah, I'll pay millions and millions of dollars, however much it takes, to have the best quarterbacks coach in the league, to have the best defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, offensive line coach, like whatever it takes. Oh, you know, the Eagles offensive line coach is the best one in the league. All right, his contract's up. 15 million, 20, like whatever it takes. I want the best offensive line. The fact that some team hasn't been more aggressive, and I get owners are cheap and whatever, but that some team hasn't figured that out to get the best of the best running their organization, I think it's insane. I think it's crazy. There's no salary cap. I know it's not my money, but man, if I had that sort of money and I could go buy the best coaching staff that money could buy, you better damn believe that I'm going to say, hey, there's no salary cap for that. I'm going and getting those guys.
Yeah, you look at the coaches who are left in the playoffs right now. Sean Payton, Sean McVay, you know, Shanahan with his ragtag group of dudes. It's Vrabel and what the turnaround they had. Good coaches win games. That's what it comes down to. And you got to pay attention to that area. So I do want to ask you guys too, because it's going to be in the news. It's been in the news a lot, and it's going to continue to be in the news. How Ben Johnson has been, you know, going on his victory lap over the past, you know, like 48 hours or so. Personally, as a Viking fan, I think it's hysterical. Like I love this. And I think it's good for the NFL, too, to have the Packers-Bears feel like a real rivalry again. Because for the first time in, I don't know how long, the Bears actually punched back. And you know, in that first half, it felt like just another situation of, okay, like here come the big bad Packers putting the Bears back in place. And Ben Johnson going for that 4th and 5 from the 32-yard line. That would have been the storyline of the game to me, was he wasn't ready for the moment in the first half. And then, of course, with the epic comeback, people just seem to forget about all that. But Ziggy, let me ask you right now, we do have to give the Bears some credit for that comeback. I mean, they turned it on in the fourth quarter. And frankly, I think if that game went on forever, I don't think the Packers would have got another stop with the way, you know, the defense eventually, they held on as long as they could. And then that balloon just burst. But Ziggy, from a non-Packer or Bear perspective, you have to find the Ben Johnson like victory lap here at least a little entertaining, right? At the very least.
I mean, Ben Johnson is trying to get his team fired up because they have to play the Rams in a few days. And that's a really difficult game. They need to come out better than they did against Green Bay if they want to win that one, most likely. So, like, I don't hold it against him at all, right? He knows his players well. He seems to know what this team needs. He was somehow able to keep them checked in a game where they were getting absolutely, they were getting the brakes beaten off them by the Packers at halftime. They held on the third quarter. And like you said, like that fourth quarter comeback did not feel like the fluky one the previous time these teams played, where you need some crazy stops and an onside kick and the rest. Like, they largely outplayed the Packers in the second half. And I think that's obviously, the Packers had mistakes. There's a lot of things you can point to there, but the Bears played good football too. If anything, the like random breaks seem to be going the Packers' way with the fumbles and the rest. But like, the Bears need to play better football to reach the goal that the organization seems to have at this point, which is going to the Super Bowl. And in order to do that, you're going to have to come out looking better than you did. So yeah, I mean, it's entertaining, but I think the main reason he's doing it is because he wants to keep that energy and keep that fire going into their next game. So like, I don't hold it against him. I don't see it as immature. I don't think this shows that he's not ready to be a coach of a playoff team. I think he's seen that his team has responded well to that up until this point. And look, if it's worked to get the Chicago Bears with Caleb Williams into the divisional round after being down 21-3 at halftime, man, keep doing whatever you're doing. You know a lot more about this than me.
I think that's well said. I think I generally agree with everything Ziggy said. So a couple things. If you build this into a rivalry and make this where it feels like Steelers Ravens, right? Or some big, or just former like Packers, Bears, you know, rivalries and things like that. That's a huge win, because for years, this is what, like, you know, Green Bay won like what, 23 of 27 games or some crazy number like that. That's not a rivalry. That's just one team kicking the other team's ass for three decades.
Yeah.
And so if by doing this for Ben, if he can make this into a real legitimate rivalry where this is split, or even if it's like 55-45 Packers, like, that feels like a huge, huge win for Ben Johnson. And if his guys are getting up a little bit extra for that game to try to beat the Packers, because he's doing this, that's a huge, huge win. And, you know, my buddy who's a Bears fan was like, isn't this great that it's a rivalry and everything like that again? I'm like, no, I liked it a lot more when we were winning, you know, 25 out of 28 games. That was a lot more fun for me. I don't care if we were blowing you out every time. So yeah, no, from a Bears standpoint, I think it makes all the sense in the world. That's the button that needed to be pushed to probably kind of get Chicago back on that level. As far as like the Ben Johnson goes, so like, what are the key talking points, right? The initial press conference of like, I like beating Matt LaFleur twice per year. I didn't think it was taboo, or I thought it was cringe when I watched it. Not as a Packers fan, I'm just like, that's kind of like weird or whatever. And there is an ongoing joke of, there has not been a head coach or general manager in the Bears like last like 15 years who has not brought up the Green Bay Packers in their introductory press conference. Where like, that's the, like the vision of like, we're going to beat the Packers.
But like, we don't, you like have Matt LaFleur, right? You kind of have to.
No, for sure. But it's just funny that that's like the thing that comes up, yeah, every single time. And that was his way of doing that. But at the same time, it certainly played well to Bears fans. And in an introductory press conference, that's what you're trying to do, is win over your fan base right away. So I understand it from that point of view. I think the good, better, best thing is super lame. And I also find it a little bit cringe. And I think it's going to, at some point, be something that once things start, it was like, you know, when Matt Nagy in Chicago had like the, they like turned out the lights and did like sort of like the dance. I don't know if it was like a dance party or whatever it was after the games when they won. And I remember Bears fans at first was like, this is so cool. This is awesome. And then as soon as there was like any sort of losing streak or anything, it was like, oh, now you won one game against the Browns and you're going to have a dance party after. And everyone like hated it after. I have a feeling that there could be a little bit of a switch that flips with that. And I've, you know, well, what about the handshake that he gave Matt LaFleur? Matt gave him the same handshake when they beat the Bears in the regular season game in Lambeau. There was literally almost no difference between the handshakes whatsoever, in my opinion. I don't think there was anything wrong with that. And then like the F the Packers stuff, as like a Packer fan, when it first happened, I'm like, okay, whatever. And there's like a level of douchiness that I think he just exudes in that situation. I think that's probably the Packer fan in me talking. Again, if you don't think some of this stuff gets said in locker rooms or on the league, I think it's interesting that Chicago decided to play that clip, because I think if that same thing happened, like easily could happen in Green Bay, where they're like F the Bears and everything like that, and that doesn't get played on Packers.com, but that's happening in locker room. Like, are we thinking that this is like conjunction junction going on in the locker rooms after games, and everyone's like, oh man, those Bears played such a hard game, or those Packers, those scrappy Packers, that was a fun game to play in, everybody. Good job. I hope they're dealing with that loss okay. Like, this is the NFL. Like, that stuff is going to get said. Again, I'm a little bit surprised they you know sort of boosted it to everybody. But yeah, if you're a Bears fan, you are eating this up every step of the way for now. And we'll see what this looks like when things aren't going as well for the Bears. And I do think some late game situations all season for Chicago has changed the narrative on a lot of what's happened, even in these games. As you mentioned, all of the stuff that went really wrong has kind of got swept under the rug because they've been able to win a couple of these games at the end. Green Bay dominated for three of these games for the most part against Chicago and is 1-2, which is, again, just classic Green Bay Packers. But no, I think at the most part, if you're Ben Johnson, if you're the, you know, Chicago ownership, if you're a Bears fan, I don't think you have any issue whatsoever with what's going on right now.
No, and they needed this, frankly, Chicago, to get out of the mud that they were in. And I know you're talking about them bringing up the Packers, and I feel like it's almost like, if Duke just dominates North Carolina for 20 years, of course the Duke coach is going to be at his or the North Carolina coach could be like, all right, well, obviously the goal is to win a national championship, but like, we got to beat Duke. Yeah, I mean, you could see the way that all you guys were acting this week. By you guys, I mean Packers and Bears fans. It was almost like its own little championship game in a sense. If you guys brought out a trophy celebration, I wouldn't have been surprised. But that's how important it is for both these organizations. Some Bears fans were saying the season was a failure if they lost to Green Bay, which, sure. And that was after, coming back from the 0-2 start and having all the success that they had this season. So I think it's awesome. It is a little weird that he's just going after LaFleur so many times. I don't know if it could come back to bite him next year. That is part of, like, when they're putting all this out and the Packers are eliminated, it's one thing. But now when Green Bay gets healthier next year and maybe you don't have as much of the late game luck you've had, things can change. But at the very least, I'm really enjoying it. I think, too, a big difference in this game versus the first two was the Bears really did dominate the whole second half. I mean, there were a couple drives at the end that Green Bay had. But in that first Chicago game, it was 3.5. I mean, what, like 3.75 worth of quarters?
58 minutes.
Yeah, 58 minutes of the Packers winning and controlling that game. This one, there was a world where that could have turned into a Bears rather convincing win. That's like, that is how much they took control in the second half. And I do think, right, the whole conversation we've had on this show has been coaching. I do think that can come down just to a matter of the Bears came out with a lot of fire and they adapted, and the Packers maybe got a little conservative, but also made a lot of mistakes. It was two halves where it was just two complete opposite halves. And once again, the Bears just had a little bit better decision-making, maybe a little bit better luck and execution in their dominant half. So you just got to give them credit. Like, you do have to give them credit, as much as I'm sure it stings for the Packers fans. It was an awesome comeback.
I want to ask you guys a question. I want you to put on, this shouldn't be difficult, I want you to put on your most aggressive Minnesota Vikings fandom hat in this situation. If as a Vikings diehard, what is your wish for how Green Bay handles this situation with Matt LaFleur? Meaning, like, you obviously want them to screw it up. So would you as a Vikings fan be like, oh yeah, please fire Matt LaFleur. We will gladly see him leave and good luck with somebody else. Or as a Vikings fan, are you like, no, please keep Matt. We know what that pathway leads to and we have no issue. You keep Matt. We know that you're not going to be able to achieve a Super Bowl and we'll sit pretty with that. As a Vikings fan, what would be the ideal situation for how Green Bay would go about handling this situation?
So you want first?
Yeah, so I actually think the worst thing Green Bay could do here is say, we're going to keep Matt LaFleur, but we're going to bring in someone like Mike McDaniel, some other offensive coordinator, and LaFleur, you have to give them play calling responsibilities. The Packers need to commit. Either you're going all in with LaFleur next year or you're trying something different. The worst thing you can do is bring in someone to change things a little bit, undermine his authority a little bit, make players unclear. Do I need to be nice to this new offensive coordinator because maybe he's going to be the head coach in 2 years? How should I be approaching Matt LaFleur? Like, the Packers need to make a decision. Either they think that things are going to be different with LaFleur or things are going to be different without. But as a Vikings fan, I say, like, bring in some offensive coordinator, whether it's like Mike McDaniel or somebody else. Say you're in charge of the offense, LaFleur. Your job is just to manage the games. Go and study how to call things in the fourth quarter because you need to work on that. And we'll see what you can do.
We'll be right back.
The injuries that the Packers have, like, clearly played a huge role in the late season collapse. And there's still no excuse when you're up 18 on a team. You have to put that away in the second half. You just do. And like, you can't even look to the injuries anymore. But it's easy to forget when that happens that there are superstars, not just, you know, stars, superstars coming back to this roster and a lot of other depth pieces. So I think the Packers are going to have a floor of being a very good team next year, if you assume no one gets hurt, which is something you can't do. But the Packers should be a very good team.
Even if some people get hurt, it's probably not going to be like four of your five best players.
Yeah. What I think is if they stayed healthy this year, I think that they would have, you know, with LaFleur, have been able to certainly and probably would have gone on a run in the playoffs. So I'd love to see them fire LaFleur. It's just a little bit of extra chaos. And when we said the players loved him, right? If you just inject more uncertainty into the situation, yes, there's a world where, let's say they go get John Harbaugh, there's a world where that works out really well for the Packers. But there's also a world where it doesn't. And I might even say it's more likely that firing LaFleur, especially with the candidates right now that are available, takes a downward turn. And it might not even be, you know, it doesn't have to be the wheels completely fall off. But it's just, yeah, maybe you do drop a tick or two. Because there is something to be said about the continuity that they have right now and with they've won a lot of games. LaFleur's what? Well, he's won like the second most games ever through 2-7 years of a coaching career. Like, they win a lot Matt LaFleur. So I'd be totally fine with them going and making a change and then just hoping they botch the hire. Because if it's not going to be John Harbaugh, who even John Harbaugh, right? Like, there are some question marks around him, as we've said. But if they don't bring in Harbaugh, you just don't know if one of these guys, like them bringing in a Cliff Kingsbury and having it really go off the rails, is something that could be possible. I just think the talent is too good for them to just completely fall apart. And Jordan Love is too good to have it completely fall apart. But my wish would be, fire LaFleur and then botch the next hire, because LaFleur will bring, no pun intended, a certain floor with him.
Yeah, I totally see that. And Ziggy, I'm with you too in the fact that if you're going to strip him of the thing that he's best at, which is offensive game planning, and we can talk about like the play calling and it gets a little Jekyll and Hyde at times, and that's fair. But like if he's the offensive guru, which is why he's there, and you neuter him of that, just please just I would much rather just fire in that situation and go with somebody else than sort of handcuff him and say somebody else has got to do that job. You're taking all the things that he doesn't do well, you know, more of the, and yes, maybe it gets a little bit better if he doesn't have as much on his plate, but you're accentuating some of his weaknesses and taking away some of his strengths. It just would make zero sense to me.
But him and McDaniel are friends, right? From Washington?
Yes, they are.
So that, like, that would seem like a pretty natural, assuming McDaniel didn't get picked up as a head coach, that would have to be a pretty ideal match, no?
If, again, it just depends. Again, are you asking Matt to give up play calling, or is Matt wanting to give up play calling, which I doubt, or is Mike McDaniel willing to take an offensive coordinator job that doesn't involve play calling? I think that's where it gets interesting. But outside of that, yeah, you could easily see a world in which those two would work together and work extremely well together.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that also, could be dangerous too.
Just really quick, we have no indication that they are wanting to get rid of Adam Stenovich. Like, there's no indicator of that, mm-hmm. yeah, whatsoever, that's what they want to do either. So we sort of have to cross that bridge first of, you know, do they actually even move on from Steno?
I got a text from a friend yesterday, kind of playing off the floor pun, where he said, you know, the Packers need to stop settling for the floor and try and find the ceiling. It's just like, all right, it was ridiculous. My buddy Aiden. It's crazy how quickly, though, in football, you kind of turn the page to next season where you guys have this horrible loss. You know, we have this horrible end to the season. And again, my dad, who...
You had a 5-game win streak.
Yeah, I guess in a sense it did feel horrible, but it wasn't actually horrible. My dad, who I brought up as saying he was, you know, ready for the year to be completely over, yesterday he comes up, he's like, you know, I'm actually really excited for this for this offseason here. And that's just how football fans operate.
I know you gotta get going relatively soon, Paul, but just really quick, which season would you have rather had, the Vikings or the Packers? I think we asked this last week, but now there's another layer to it.
Oh, man. And we're not including... I'd rather have had... Oh, God. We're not including the future, right?
We're not thinking about the future, right? We're not thinking about, like, what is this mean going to next year,
correct,
or whatever.
Just the season. Just the,
it has got to be the Vikings season.
But, Ziggy, you're forgetting just how irrelevant we were. Like,
no, oh. But that's the thing, the hurt came early, the hurt was weaker, and then we got to have some fun watching all-time great Harrison Smith go out on a high note.
I'm a big proponent of you take the competitive games when you could get them. I think I'd have to pick the Packers just because, you know, at the very least you had... God, it's tough, Andy. I'm just thinking about, like, knowing that it ended like this. And knowing the way, it's not like
playoffs, and then have a complete kick you in the nuts.
Yeah, and it's not.
We had some bad games. We had some disappointing games. We did not have any traumatic games this season.
No, and it's not like the Packers.
When Packers fans hear 4th and 8, they're not even going to remember that this used to be a good thing for them.
Yeah, I actually think I might take the Vikings. Like, this is one of the rare cases where I would actually take the more, like, mind-numbingly bad season, and it just got so hopeless in Minnesota. But you guys had, it felt like 2 or 3 different stretches. It was a weird roller coaster year in Green Bay. It was like Super Bowl, oh no, we actually stink. Super Bowl, oh no, we actually stink. Oh no, we actually lost to the Bears. And that was just kind of it was a tough year. I mean, you guys had in all things considered, for how it went from Micah to Detroit to Washington, it was almost impossible to imagine it going much worse than this. Which was, you know, not to bring up old battle wounds right now.
No.
But it was just a heartbreaking year as a Packer fan. I think I'd actually go with us, yeah. But man, it's, I mean, not good options.
My only argument otherwise would be, I do feel like watching Jordan Love play week in and week out was probably just maybe entertaining enough, rather than having poor quarterback play the majority of the year. Getting to see Micah Parsons play through the vast majority of the season was a ton of fun. And you do get a playoff game, like, even though it ends in the way that it did, getting ready for, preparing for, getting excited for a playoff game is a level of excitement. But losing 5 in a row at the end when you were a Super Bowl contender at one point and having everything happen the way it did, and the vice versa, as like you said, some early pain and then a kind of fun 5-game win streak, getting to say to Harrison, you know, goodbye to Harrison Smith the right way.
There's a strong argument. I changed my mind. It's the Vikings season sucked. I'd go Packers. I'm sorry. I gave it more thought.
It's an interesting combo.
You guys having competitive games, it's worth it. It's worth it. This week, the week leading into Packers Bears, even after losing 4 in a row, it was like, you know, that first half that you guys had was fun for you. Yeah, when we just haven't, I mean, God, when you have Max Brosmer going into Seattle, you want to know some pain? Max Brosmer going into Seattle, that's pain. That's real pain.
That's clown car. That's just watching a clown car just have, you know, just give you everything that could go, you know, wrong, and just, you know, just watching it in real time. It's funny, like the Packers game against the Bears sort of had like echoes to their entire season of like, you start off so amazing and it looks like you are on top of the world, and then you just come absolutely crashing down in embarrassing ways at the end. It was literally like the Packers record throughout the season and how you fell through the season is literally like how that Bears game went.
Totally. And then you had the little spike on the touchdown drive to Golden. Like that, it was almost exactly as the Packers season played out. And the Bears, on the other hand, are just sitting back having like the most magical season in recent memory. So I don't know. I know we don't want to say it, but maybe they were just owed this one after a long period of suffering. So get it out of the way and we'll move on to next year. So, all right,
we'll see.
We'll wrap it up there. Sorry again, Andy, that was just crushing, this weekend, but you know what? We flipped the page, we'll have the combine coming up soon. Getting to free agency, the draft. It's
no first
train doesn't stop. Yeah, no. Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. So there are brighter days around the corner here. You get Micah Parsons back. That's what you can do.
And Tucker Kraft and Devontae Wyatt, amongst others, Zach Tom. So yes, there are hopefully brighter days ahead.
And like we have JJ McCarthy year two, you know, everything will be better. Everything will be better. So, all right. Ziggy, just to give Andy a break here, why don't you send us off, Ziggy? From Cambodia. I think this is the last show you'll be in Cambodia for, but because Andy, you have lunch.
You never told us your situation of why, what the Cambodia connection.
A lot of people have been wondering why I've been in Cambodia, and there have been a lot of answers thrown out there, and none of them have been quite right. So I want to correct the record. I think this is a good way to bring us out. A lot of people don't know this, but in like the 13th century, 14th century, the Angkorian Empire in Cambodia was the biggest empire in the entire world. They had the most people. They were the wealthiest. They built these huge monuments. We're talking Angkor Wat. We're talking Ta Prohm. We're talking Prakan. Like these unbelievably huge temples.
Obviously.
Yes. Universities, all this stuff. And they got a little bit complacent as they were on top of the world. And a group of people that they had traditionally dominated, the Siamese people, started to get fed up. They said, we're better than this. We don't have to take this from this huge empire. We're going to fight back. And basically overnight, after the reign of Jayavarman VII, after the 102 hospitals, after all of this, they invade and they win a battle against the Angkorians. And basically overnight, the Angkorian Empire goes from the biggest, most powerful in the world. They abandon all their cities. It immediately turns into ruins, and the people are never the same again. This may have been what happened to the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. You may have seen the traditionally dominated people completely take out their rage on the Green Bay Packers and reduce the empire to ruin. So I'm studying things here to see if that pattern is continuing in Green Bay. We'll see going into the offseason, going into next year, whether or not that happens. But if so, Andy, it's been nice knowing you. It's been nice seeing the Green Bay Packers. And that's all we got for this season.
Ziggy's not allowed to close the show anymore. That's his last time closing the show.